February 12, 2007. We have a public hearing and public testimony on House Bill 5034, the Land Use Board of Appeals. If you'd like to just come forward. Do you have anything you'd like to start with?
Well, you do have at your desk a memo that captures sort of the summary of the history of the budget for Land Use Board of Appeals. They're mostly a general fund budget. I think the agency was not here for the overview component the first week of session, so he'll be providing a bit of an overview to the agency. With that, I think Todd Bassam, the board chair, is here to give you that orientation and talk about Land Use Board of Appeals.
Okay. Committee members, what we will do also is have Mr. Bassam give us first portion of his presentation, then we'll go to questions, and then we'll go into performance measures and questions after that. And then if there's any public testimony, we will go to that. So please start at your leisure.
Okay, thank you. Chair Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Todd Bassam. I'm the current board chair of the Land Use Board of Appeals. We rotate the board position every year, so this year is my privilege to prepare and present the budget. I'm going to go through the materials I presented. There's some appendices I'll be referring to in the back. If you would like more detail or wish to ask questions at any point, please interrupt me. If I'm giving you too much detail, please let me know. Agency mission, purpose, statutory basis, and goals. LUBA's significant feature of Oregon's land use program is to resolve land use appeals as quickly and efficiently as possible. LUBA was created in 1979 because the scheme of review at that time, which went to the circuit courts, was very slow and inefficient and not very satisfactory. And Appendix A is a schema which shows sort of the, from 3,000 feet up, the land use planning and judicial review structure. And in the top left-hand corner, you can see legislative branch, LCDC. These are the main policy drivers in the land use arena. They give direction a framework for the 240 cities and 36 counties, which then adopt comprehensive plans and land use regulations. Pursuant to those plans and regulations, the cities and counties issue permit decisions. Both what are called post-acknowledgement plan and land use regulation amendments and permit decisions can be appealed to LUBA. And someone once estimated there are 10,000 land use decisions made in the state every year. Approximately 200 or so a year of those are appealed to LUBA. LUBA conducts its review. I should point out that LUBA has a limited scope of review. We don't just review things de novo. Our statute sets out exactly how we're supposed to review, what we can review, and what we cannot review. There's a significant amount of deference accorded to local governments on evidentiary issues and on interpretations of local standards. LUBA doesn't defer to local governments' interpretations of state statutes and state rules. About 20 or 30 appeals per year of LUBA decisions are appealed to the Court of Appeals, which has its own expedited review process and also its own limited review, and those can go to the Supreme Court. The speedy nature of land use review in Oregon is throughout the statutory scheme. Local governments have to make permit decisions within 120 days or 150 days, depending upon the particular statute they're working under. LUBA's statute requires that we issue our final decision, that we resolve the appeal within 77 days of the date that the record is settled. The Court of Appeals has its own expedited deadlines for speedy review. And I should add, I think the main justification for having a speedy review for land use matters is primarily economic. A lot of development proposals are on a tough, tight line. They got financing on the line. And it was believed by the 1979 legislature that speed, time is of the essence in resolving land use matters. So LUBA's mission is to provide a specialized appellate review body that resolves land use disputes quickly and efficiently. And second function is to make its decisions available as a decision-making resource to state and local legislatures, land use professionals, all the people in the land use arena. We've identified several goals to guide us in that mission. Goal one, resolve land use appeals quickly. Two, resolve all legal errors and land use decisions in a single appeal. That's because, well, I'll get to that later. Goal three, resolve land use appeals correctly. And four, provide a quick and easy public access to LUBA orders and final opinions. And based on those goals, we developed some key performance measures that we'll be discussing later. let's see. Appendix B is a schema showing how LUBA's review process works and show you how expedited that is. Starting in the top left-hand corner, city or candidate adopts a final land use decision, gives notice of a decision. Parties have until 21 days to file appeal with LUBA. If they don't file within 21 days, no appeal can be filed. Then the local government has 21 days to file the record. If there are no objections to the record, we just keep on going. Occasionally there are objections to the record, and there's sort of a timeout to resolve objections to the record. Once the record is settled, a petition for review is filed with LUBA within 21 days. Again, the response brief is filed within another 21 days. And at this point, we're up to about day 50 in the 77-day cycle. LUBA schedules an oral argument around that time, around day 50 or so. We conduct oral argument, the parties come before us, make their arguments, and LUBA then has about 21 to 28 days in which to issue its final opinion. As a practical matter, it's actually much less than that. We can rarely have the luxury of conducting an oral argument and turning immediately to issuing a final, start working on the final opinion, usually working on the appeals from oral arguments 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. So as a practical matter, we often start working on writing the opinion on day 70, the last week or 2 weeks of the 77-day period. Turning to LUBA's structure, we're currently a six-person agency. A copy of our organizational chart is at Appendix C. We have three board members that are all attorneys that are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. The board members prepare, the basic work product of the board members are what we call orders and opinions, and this is an example of a final order. We also issue a number of intermediate opinions, resolving record objections, motions to dismiss, motions to intervene, various motions that come before the board. After conducting oral argument, we issue final written opinions that resolve the issues raised on appeal. We have one staff attorney who assists the board greatly in writing final opinions, doing research. I'll talk about Appendix D later, but we receive about anywhere from 180 to 240 appeals a year. To resolve those appeals, we produce an average of 475 or so intermediate orders and final opinions per year. We have a paralegal, which manages what we call the publications process. Our final, what are called slip opinions, are issued to the parties, of course. They are provided to Westlaw and Lexis and other online research facilities. They're posted on our website. And they're eventually published in what are called OR LUBAs, or LUBA reports, actually, a hardbound volume which we sell to a subscriber base. And as I'll talk in a minute, that sales of those volumes support the publications function of the agency. Roughly a third to half of the paralegal's time is spent on publications and activities related to publications, and the remainder is spent on front office administrative tasks. I think it's important to understand historical changes in the program structure. We began as a five-person agency back in 1979. Appeals at that time averaged about 120, 127 appeals a year. Starting in 1991, we began to experience over 200 appeals per year, and that combined with a turnover of the board in the mid-1990s resulted in a significant backlog of cases, both issuing a final opinion, we're up to 6 months late, and publishing LUBA reports. The legislature responded by authorizing two additional staff, initially two staff attorneys in 1996. In 1999, one staff attorney position was eliminated and replaced with a publications coordinator position. And with these additional resources, LUBA was able to eliminate the case backlog and the publications backlog by around the year 2001. During that process, the publications process became very streamlined, and we were later able to eliminate one of the positions and downsize to a six-person agency, attaining our current structure, three board members, one staff attorney, one paralegal, and one administrative staff. And that current structure is, in our view, a very efficient and optimum structure. With that structure, we're in a position to resolve land use appeals in compliance with our statutory mandates and issue timely LUBA reports as long as the number of appeals doesn't significantly exceed maybe 220, 230 appeals per year for a sustained period of time. Experience has shown that if you have those sustained periods of appeals, or if you get a number of complex appeals that come through at the same time, we're sort of operating at the margins of our ability to comply with our statutory mandates. So that's the overview. Should I pause here and ask an opportunity for any questions?
Yes, Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. I just wanted to comment more than ask a question, but in 2.5 years of being totally immersed in land use planning at the state level, I have not ever heard one complaint about LUBA. And I think that speaks well of how you are processing, how you've got a hold on things, and that you're running what I view as a very efficient agency. Don't always agree with your opinions, but you're running a very good agency.
Chair Devlin, Representative Grab, thank you. I think, as I'll talk about, the performance measures, our public service performance measure shows high returns of satisfaction with LUBA, so I appreciate your comments.
Senator Nelson. Yes,
thank you. Major 37, so you don't really have any idea. What are some possible scenarios?
Chair Devlin, Senator Nelson, Measure 37 is a great unknown. We've had about the last part of the 2006, we received three appeals of what we call post-Measure 37 waiver claims. These are where there's already been a waiver under Measure 37, but there's some approval that's still required under the law that applied at the time the landowner acquired the property. And those are arguably land use appeals that can be appealed to LUBA. Not sure how many of those appeals will be coming to LUBA. It's really unknown. My guess, my gut sense, is probably a dozen, at most two dozen, of those type of appeals during any particular period of time during the biennium.
That affect your projection of 220 to 230? What'd you say, 220 to 230?
It could. I guess the nightmare scenario would be, because of the economy, we continue to have a large number of bread and butter land use decisions. We have 240 land use decisions. And on top of that, we have 10 or 20 Measure 37 appeals. That could be the straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back.
Now I have a question. A couple of weeks ago, the Court of Appeals directed all successful waivers that need to be appealed to go directly to the Court of Appeals rather than back through circuit courts. Does that alleviate anything from your agency?
Chair Devlin, Representative Garrod, if I understand that decision correctly, I don't think it will affect any of these post-Measure 37 waivers that will come to us. All that would affect is the sort of the pre-waiver process.
One question I had, let's say we get through the Measure 37 process one way or another, and you do have a number of appeals. I wouldn't expect that it would be an extraordinary number, to be honest. But how would that affect LUBA? Just to get a basic understanding, the three members of the board, do you hear, all three of you hear oral arguments on every case?
Chair Devlin, yes, that's correct. Our current practice is to have all three board members hear oral argument and decide the case. There was a time back in the backlog days when we had panels of two, and we found that to be ultimately inefficient, because occasionally the third member would disagree with what the two were doing, and we decided it was much better both for quality and productivity to stick with three.
Like a lot of appellate bodies, do individual board members get assigned decisions to write so that, you're all basically not writing the decisions on every case?
That's correct. When an appeal comes in, it's assigned to a particular board member to manage the process as up to oral argument. After oral argument, we get together and we tentatively discuss and tentatively reach a decision if we can. That board member then begins writing the opinion. It's then circulated among the board members, and comments are made, and there's a process of editing, make sure it's correct. Very occasionally, there's another board member will write a concurrence or dissent. But generally, most opinions in the last few years have been unanimous.
And appeals from the board to the Court of Appeals, are they a matter of right, or can the Court of Appeals deny to hear an appeal?
Chair Devlin, they're essentially a matter of right, although the Court of Appeals can do what they call affirm without opinion. So they can not issue an actual opinion, they can just affirm it.
Any additional questions, or we'll go into performance measures?
I was going to turn to the budget discussion first, unless you want to skip.
Yeah, that would be fine.
On page 4 of the presentation, there's a table there, which I borrowed from BAM, which sets out our recommended budget, the governor's recommended budget. As Elko mentioned, we're almost funded almost entirely from the general fund. Our other fund budget pays the cost of printing the LUBA reports and 35% of the personal services cost of the paralegal position. We charge about $175 for this volume, which is a hefty price. We have about 80 subscribers, and that subscriber base has grown in recent years from about 70 to 80, which is a little bit surprising to me. In this day of electronic research, one wouldn't expect that, but apparently we have a loyal following, which is fortunate because it provides about $70,000 per biennium to support the publication to function. I prepared a prioritized list of programs and reduction options. We're such a small agency. We have essentially a single program. There really isn't much to talk about here, but we do have two reasonably discrete functions. Number one, resolving land use appeals, and two, our publications function. The first, resolving land use appeals, function are funded by the general fund, and as I mentioned, the publications function is funded by the general funds. I laid out a 10% reduction in each of those functions. The only way to reach those functions would be to either eliminate the staff attorney position, which would have a serious effect on the agency's performance, or reduce LUBA's authority to pay for issuing LUBA reports, which may have a negative impact on the publication function. Turning to key budget drivers and big issues, as I mentioned, the economic growth is essentially the largest factor in the number of appeals we get. It's not a one-to-one correlation, but when the economy is booming, the number of appeals tend to boom. When there's a recession, the numbers tend to go down. In terms of our performance measure, or in terms of our resolving appeals on time, that's a big factor. Another factor is sort of the complexity of appeals, and also sort of the spacing of them. If we get a sort of evenly spaced throughout a given period of time, they're much easier to deal with. If we get a group of cases, particularly complex cases, that come through at the same time, that can result in at least short-term problems. We discussed a little bit about ballot measure 37, and as I mentioned, it's uncertain what the effect of that will be. My best guess is that we'll get a dozen, at most two dozen, what we call post-measure 37 cases. Another factor which might play in looking into the future is periodic review. Recently, LCDC, Land Conservation Development Commission, has reduced the scope and a number of periodic review. Local governments essentially have a choice now. They can either go through periodic review, or they can do what are called adopt post-acknowledgement plan amendments. Those post-acknowledgement plan amendments can be appealed to LUBA, and we may see an increase in the number of those appeals. The difficulty there, those type of cases tend to be very complex. We had a recent appeal, 16 appeals actually, from Jefferson County, where they did a review of their entire comprehensive plan and a land use regulation that adopted much new stuff about destination resorts. I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more of those kind of cases, which tend to be much more complex and more difficult. Another thing to look down the road is the big look may result in some legislative amendments to the land use program. Our experience has been that when there's a period of settled law, the numbers of cases kind of settle down because people know what the law is. When there's a number of legislative amendments or rule amendments, there's an unsettled period where appeal numbers tend to go up because it's uncertain what the law is. Okay, we reached the key performance measures, and I understand you wish to pause here and open up a broader discussion.
Any additional questions before we get to performance measures? Please go ahead.
Our Appendix E contains our performance measure report. We have 9 performance measures, and we are proposing for this budget, are proposing that 4 of those performance measures be eliminated, numbers 5, 6, 7, and 8. This is based on the advice of our LFO analyst, which we agreed with, that these decisions were somewhat, or these performance measures were somewhat tangential to our core mission. We want to be able to focus on things that are more key. And they're also written in a way that we're sort of performance-oriented. They didn't give as much guidance as to how to improve our efficiency. So what we proposed then is continuing with what we think are 4 or 5 core performance measures. And I'll discuss those in turn. First is our final opinions. This is percentage of appeals and land use decisions that are resolved within statutory deadlines, or if all parties agree within no more than a 7-day extension of the statutory deadline. This is sort of our key performance measure, as you can imagine. And in recent years, since 2001, we've consistently met that our target, which is 90%. Our 2006 performance was 85%, which I hope doesn't represent a long-term trend. I think it's just the way the numbers flow. Our second performance measure is record objections, and a common theme for all these performance measures, they're often in tension with each other. Our main function is to produce opinions as quickly as possible. At the same time, we want to produce decisions that, if they're appealed to the Court of Appeals, will be affirmed. We want to make decisions that are correct. And those two things are in tension with each other. If we didn't care about quality, we could always meet the 77-day deadline. If all we cared about was quality, we'd have a tough time meeting the 77-day deadline. Record objections is another example here. There's a statute that requires that LUBA resolve record objections within 60 days of the date they're filed. And one of the first things that tend to be pushed off to the side when things get busy are record objections. And so often this is sort of see a correlation there where we choose to focus on issuing final opinions on time at the expense of record objections. We have to try to balance those, but that tension is always there. Our target in 2006 was 90%, and our performance was 95%. And the key performance measure 3 is also the same sort of theme. There's a statute that requires that where we can, we resolve all issues, and that's for an obvious reason. A decision that resolves only some of the issues doesn't foster the statutory goal of bringing finality to land use decisions as quickly as possible. And we've chosen over the years to emphasize this one. We almost always will try to resolve all issues, even if it means issuing an opinion a week late or two weeks late. We'll call the parties, we'll ask the permission for it. And we believe that if the parties are okay with that period of time, they prefer having a complete opinion that resolves all issues rather than one that comes out on day 77 that is incomplete or that doesn't fully resolve all issues. And key performance measure number 4, appellate court review. The percentage of final opinions that are sustained on appeal, we have a target of 80%, and our last performance was 81%. We've proposed increasing that target for the 2007 reporting year from 80% to 85% to give ourselves more of a challenge. And the last one we propose to retain is key performance measure 5, customer service. It's the percentage of customers who rate their satisfaction with LUBA's service as good or excellent with respect to overall service, timeliness, accuracy, helpfulness, expertise, and availability of information. We collected data from February to throughout 2006 and exceeded our target of 95%. I can pause here and we can...
No questions on the performance measures. Yes, Representative Garrard.
And can you go into number 7? Not sure I'm understanding the graph in regards to what V40, 41, 42, et cetera, stand for.
I guess one of the reasons why Chair Devlin and Representative Garrard, this is one of the reasons we wanted to delete these performance measures because they're actually kind of difficult to understand. I should add that we actually propose to continue tracking this data and use it and report it to the legislature, but we won't report it officially. To answer your question, the V's represent the volume. So this, for example, is volume 42. And what this performance measure is trying to track is... we have things called headnotes, which are essentially summaries of the opinions, and those are arranged in a topical database, or so it becomes a research tool. And we post those headnotes on our website, and people can log on our website and find cases very easily. If you're interested in non-farm dwelling cases, you click on a certain key, and it takes you all those cases, all the headnotes there. What this was intended to track is the time it took our paralegal to post those headnotes on our website. Hope that answered your question.
It did. Here again, your chart indicates that you are failing and have failed for quite some time in reaching your targets.
Chair Devlin, Representative Garrard, It actually doesn't. It is confusing. The 30 is 30 days is the target, and so anything less than 30 is achieving the performance measure. So in for volume 43, that represents a failure. I think there was a problem with the printer at that for that volume. But for the remainder of the volumes, they're all below 30 days. We posted the head notes soon earlier than 30 days. So those represent a performance measure. Satisfaction.
Tricky, Mr. Chair. It's exactly reverse of what you think it is. So, thank you very much for answering.
Maybe one of the justifications for removing it is a performance.
Indeed. Indeed.
If you understand it, yeah, that would be
Do you have any closing statements?
I could talk briefly about our efficiency measures. We've tried over the years to improve the quality of our services and save the state money, and there's a list there on page 9 and 10 of the things we've done. I won't go into those unless there's other questions. And number 7, our strategic plan, I've tried to think of, we're not a very proactive agency, in the sense we have goals like reduce hunger in the state. We try to efficiently resolve the appeals that come to us, so we're sort of a reactive agency. Our long-term goal is to maintain the current high level of efficiency and timeliness in performing our review functions. And I try to, in 7, pages 10 and 11, try to lay out a couple of ideas for improving long-term. One is to continue to focus on technology. We recently changed our editing process, so we edit our opinions online, which or not online, but electronically, rather than by hand, which improved things quite a bit. I'd like to explore ways to limit the effects of turnover. Past history has shown that can be a significant precursor or trigger for development of backlog. In fact, we had a small backlog this past year. We had a turnover on the board. One board member left. There was a 3-month vacancy. And during that time, we had a short period where we were out of compliance. We were able to regain compliance with our key performance measure 1 very shortly. But I'd like to work with the governor's office and the board to find ways to reduce that turnover. And lastly, we have used legal interns more efficiently. We have a program now where we have volunteer interns come, and they come for a short period of time, and frankly, I'm not very useful for it. It's more of a public service than anything. I'd like to explore the possibility of making that a more stable program, have legal interns come for longer periods of time, probably pay them a stipend to encourage that. I think we can get a lot more out of that. That might be very helpful if, in fact, caseloads go up to the point where LUBA is no longer meeting its deadlines. We have some options at that point. We can come to the board and ask for more staff, but an interim idea might be to try to use our legal interns more efficiently. And that's really all I had.
Just curiosity, how long is each board member's term? How long are they appointed for?
Chair Devlin, they're appointed for 4-year terms.
And is there any limitation on how many times they can be reappointed? Or?
Chair, not that I'm aware of, no.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, and we have no one signed up to testify, and if you want to introduce your BAM analyst.
Derek.
Okay, and your name?
Kay Erickson.
Kay Erickson, okay. I always feel kind of funny with the BAM analysts because they sit here throughout the entire testimony and they don't say a single word normally. Is the party in the audience? You're not here to testify, are you? Okay. Well, with that, we are closed for today and are finished for today. Do you have anything to add?
The work session is scheduled on Thursday.
On Thursday. Good. And we do not anticipate any difficulties at this point. So we will see you back on Thursday. One of the things I did open this up for is if anybody had any questions about performance measures, just in general, not about this agency, but just in general.
I have a question.
Yes.
Now, for instance, in regards to Representative Burr's question on the performance measure 7, that I guess there's a recommendation that be eliminated, is that
yes.
correct? So how do we make, how long do we have a performance measure before we make that decision The other is, I know that there is discouragement about changing performance measures too often because then they become a moving target, I mean, basically. So how do you reconcile that, Chair?
Senator Devlin, Representative. You will, through the process of the work session, have the opportunity to finalize what are the legislatively approved key performance measures for this agency. So the agency has made a proposal to eliminate, as he mentioned, four of them. You'll have the opportunity to influence whether that is what ultimately happens or not. Currently, the cycle is every 2 years we repeat this because the key performance measures are legislatively approved as the process stands today. Does that answer your question?
Sort of.
Okay.
I mean, the second part is uh-huh. more of a policy discussion about how often we change those performance measures, or because then it's hard to gauge if you've made any progress if you're changing them every 2 years. I mean, that's the question I have. Or, I mean, in this case, it's an elimination. Yeah. But we also could change it if we wanted to.
So I would say, and maybe Ms. Farr can comment, is that we made, in the last budget cycle, we made a lot of changes mm-hmm. to performance measures, and I think that's why the co-chairs have pretty much indicated they want to keep mm-hmm. changes to a minimum this time. Deletions are not really an issue, but if you do keep changing them, then you wonder what your really base data is to make any judgment about a performance of an agency. And mm-hmm. so.
Yeah, Chair Devlin, Representative, the opportunity to change them every 2 years doesn't mean that they change everything. As the agency here indicated, there are five that they're carrying forward that were from the last biennium. So there's no change to those particular measures. They put them up at, you know, as part of the process for you to look at whether you want to eliminate them or not. But I would say most agencies are carrying forward numbers of measures from the 05-07 biennium. So there are effectively no change requests to those key performance measures.
Okay, and one last question. And my understanding is the performance measures are also linked to benchmarks wherever possible. And so was this performance measure linked with any benchmark? What exactly was the purpose when it was the original intent of it? That would be helpful for me before we make a decision about whether to eliminate it or not. I mean, it is obviously confusing, but do you have any sense, or does staff have any sense? I don't see that it gives a context, but the context isn't for the benchmark. It's not really, doesn't make much sense to me. It talks about traffic congestion, vehicle travel.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
One of the beauties of, if you can call it that, the performance measures is the flexibility of them, where we can make subjective determinations about whether the information that we're getting from them is of any value at all in assessing how the agency is doing. And I think that sometimes it takes the agencies a couple cycles to decide whether or not it's valuable information for us and them both. And like this one in particular is a good example. It's, you know, I would think our discussion would be, first, is it valuable information to us at all? And if it is 30 days the appropriate line? Since they meet it every single time, does it mean that they've proven their success and therefore we don't need to keep addressing it? Or does it mean that 30 days should be 14 days or something? And then we'd have a don't worry, I'm not implying it should be. But then we would have a discussion with the agency about whether or not the line is drawn correctly. And we would have, I think, the complete discretion to decide whether it's information that's valuable to us or not.
So could staff just explain the Oregon context? I understand, you know, we're supposed to be linking to benchmarks, so and I think it's a great idea, because one of the first things when I came here in 2001 is I had been reading the benchmark report for years and couldn't understand how our budget was linked to that, and now this helps. But I was, and I haven't read it's recently, but by looking at, and I should do that, but it seemed like a stretch for me, this urban context of how some of these were linked. And I guess, is that a decision that's made through the Ways and Means process, or does the agency make those decisions to expand the means?
Okay, Senator Devlin, Representative. That decision is made by the agency. And I think there's a historical implication here that I'll try to put on the table candidly as I can. When we first started the key performance measure process several biennia ago, the drive was for agencies to link to benchmarks. There's a lot of education about agencies linking to benchmarks, and so the result of that was a number of agencies just sort of tried to link to everything as, you know, that they could ever imagine would be a possible link. And I think that today we're encouraging agencies to really be more thoughtful about that. But ultimately, it is the agency that that decides at this point in time about whether or not they link to a benchmark. And I think it's certainly, you know, up to this committee to ask those kinds of things during the work session or for.
If the results of that number 7 had shown that 3 years in a row they were not able to get it out by 30 days, then it would prompt a question in me of, do you have enough FTEs to be getting your work done, which is a ways and means issue. But when you go, you know, 6, 8, 10 volumes in a row of easily meeting your requirement, then it prompts the question in me, is this information really giving me anything?
Well, then I'll give you another example, and please don't the gentleman from LUBA take this as that it's reflective of LUBA, because LUBA is so small that it's not really, there's nothing to change. But if you had an agency that had 1,000 employees and it was meeting a standard all the time, some people would say that, well, that's that you don't need to do anything with that agency. Another way to look at that is, could they meet the standard with less resources?
Or if they set the standard too low.
Yeah, nothing like punishing success.
No, it's not necessarily punishing success, but sometimes as you've got limited amounts of resources. I remember a presentation once in which the Department of Transportation said that it could do something much more efficiently than it had been doing. I think it was weight mile tax. And we asked the question, well, and it's a very cumbersome process, extremely cumbersome process. We asked the question, well, if you can do this so much better with this technological improvements, how many of these positions that currently do the work are you going to eliminate? And the answer was, we don't really plan on eliminating. So I think sometimes performance measures can make you see some things in agencies that might be overstaffed also.
Interesting how much subjectivity there is in our objective criteria.
Yeah. Well, I won't ask Ms. Farr the broad question I was going to ask her, because that might keep us here another 20 minutes. But the one reason Ms. Farr is only here for this one budget, but if you ever have a question about performance measures, she's the LFO analyst assigned to performance measures. Senator Nelson.
On another issue, in another committee that I was in last week on public safety, Department of Justice was in. It was basically they're asking for an increase in attorney's fees when they provide opinion for agencies from $111 to, I think, $128. And so one of the budgets we had coming through said, well, it's indeterminate what the final budget will be. We'll take care of this in an omnibus final bill at the very end, omnibus final bill at the very end. And so are we going to have many of our budgets here? This budget doesn't cover for that, but they don't go to the Department of Justice. But
my wife comment, we will have adjustments for DAS charges. I don't think you have any AG charges. You shouldn't. Yeah, but we will have DAP for almost all of our budgets, will we not, if they're passed out early.
Yeah.
If our
Senator Devlin, I'm going to have to get back to you on this question, because this is my first cycle through the budget process, so I don't want to give misinformation. So I can get back to you. Normally, Paul Siebert's here if you'd like to.
I was listening and jumped in.
What we do is we just adjust them all at the end.
Well, they're talking. Who handles your Court of Appeals defenses?
I guess the process is there's one bill at the end that we adjust all of the technical adjustments for all the various agencies. We do one bill to do that.
Okay. So when we approve these budgets, we're not really approving the final budget potentially, because
And then you're probably not really appealing. Senator Nelson, you're probably not really appealing the final then either, because we will have a relatively significant sum that will go to probably the board or to our special session now in terms of to final settlement of contracts, which will actually then appropriate money out to individual agencies to take into consideration what collective bargaining agreements we and what the scope of those have been. So. Any additional questions? Well, with that, not quite what we did last week in an 8-minute meeting.
I like the trend.
But tomorrow and Wednesday we will have the Department of State Lands, and then on Thursday we will have 3 work sessions, and I don't anticipate those taking long. With that, we are adjourned. Senator.